Okay, I agree. Bob Marley says we don't need no more trouble. It's Bob Marley and the Wailers with that incredible song that became a hit even as it started out in 1973. It's from his Catch a Fire album, one of the most popular albums that he did. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're going to be talking about a speech today. That speech, as you know, is the State of the Union address that will be given by the President, Donald J. Trump, later tonight at around 9 o'clock, at least, I think, Eastern Time. And with an expected audience of about 40 to 45 million people. Well, personally, this is just me, personally, I'm not a speech person. Not if you understand what speeches are for. Speeches are to persuade, to encourage, to excite, to deny, to cajole, to situate oneself in an advantageous position to head off a disaster. Speeches are made in the midst of disaster to calm people down. Speeches have all kinds of purposes. And this speech tonight will be no exception. It will have many, many purposes. I don't know if Donald Trump knows that, but generally, when it comes to speeches, the speeches are made to for a specific purpose or specific purposes. And we will talk about this today. What I'd like you to keep in mind is that you're not just listening to a speech if you listen to it. We're just not going to be listening to a speech. We'll be listening to a lot of things that are occurring before it, and a lot of things that the president hopes will happen after it. So when you listen to a speech, you want to pay attention, or you never forget that it has its own context. It has its own set of purposes that you can't really ignore. You should always keep in mind the speech, in fact, has a specific purpose or specific purposes. It's not about a guy just getting in front of a microphone and talking. The speech has a particular set of purposes that it will cover and it will keep in mind. And so we are going to talk today about what we expect, not of the speech itself, but what is going to be, what will emerge in your view, as the purposes of the speech. And why would you take that position that the speech has particular purposes? Let's start out. I'll give you the number, of course, 888-874-4888. I'm going to ask you some preliminary questions about a speech. And how do you listen to a speech? Obviously, you listen for what is being said, but of course, we're better than that. We're more skilled than that. So we listen for what is not said. Okay, now this is going to sound a little odd to you, perhaps, but this is really how you train yourself to listen to a speech or to anything somebody's saying to you. You can't help but hear what is being said. I mean, it's hitting your eardrums. So you hear it. What really puts you at a whole different level is when you put the whole picture together and you are concentrating on what is not being said. Sometimes in that vacuum, you find the real intention of a speech. You find a lot more about the speaker and the true intent. But let's take a look at the environment of the speech that we will be hearing tonight. What would you describe as the environment of the speech? And this is going to frame the speech. This is going to have a lot to do with the thrust of the speech, with the content of the speech. It's going to have a lot to do even with the speaker, of course. So, give us an idea from your perspective as to what is the intent, you think, of the speech. Mahat from New York, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Greetings.
Hello.
To the beloved. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, I was just saying greetings to me, and of course, always to you, you trees. Well, I guess I'll, if I'm up, if I'm not sleeping and don't have to depend on the clips, I might watch it for some of the drama in terms of watching the Republicans, you know, routinely clap. And, of course, Nancy Pelosi is going to be right directly behind him. But I'm not expecting much different than I know that the line is that he's looking to talk about working in a bipartisan way in unity. But I suspect, especially since Stephen Miller, you know, that white supremacist at his elbow, is going to bring us back to the lies around the wall and all that racial demagoguery. And
if I could kind of hold you up for a minute. We don't want to talk about content just yet. We want to talk about what is the environment of the speech.
Yeah, well, that's actually a good question, because if I think about the environment, I think about the fact that a 35, what's that, about 5 weeks, is that Donald Trump was trying to hold on to a situation where he had no clue as to what people were dealing with in terms of putting food on the table, paying rent or mortgage, car payment, et cetera, et cetera. And so I think that puts him in a terrible position, especially since he's half threatening to do it again. Let's remember that until his friends couldn't get out of LaGuardia and JFK into D.C. on the shuttle, and, you know, the air traffic control was TSA and all at all, that was the only thing that really got his attention. So I see an environment that's pretty devastating, pretty debilitating, but I don't think he'll have much awareness of that.
All right. What is the environment as concerns the speaker? What is coming with him or even before him as he makes his speech tonight?
Well, if he's saying bipartisanship, which I guess he feels he has to when he has some understanding of dealing with divided government now, I'm not sure that he really is going to. Give me the question again, you trees. I'm losing it.
Okay. He's going to make a speech. The question is, what is the environment in which he is making the speech.
Okay.
From your perspective, what is happening? What is surrounding the speech? What is the atmosphere?
I got it now. One of the things that's surrounding the speech is that the Republicans, some of them are going to actually go against the way he seems to be going. And I don't think they're going to allow him, including, you know, the one who stood on the sidelines, Mitch McConnell, to either try another shutdown at other people's expense. And even this idea of a national emergency, I think that, first of all, they can do a joint resolution, which Pelosi will do.
You're getting very, very specific. I just want a general overview as to what is the state of affairs as Donald Trump approaches the nation tonight to deliver his State of the Union address. That's what we call the environment of the speech. It's taking place in an environment, a particular environment.
Yes.
And that in turn will shape and affect the speech. Don't you agree?
Yes. And part of that environment, which is really significant, is that a whole trove of his own beloved Republicans might be going in another direction from where he's headed.
Right. So we have an environment, as you have described so far, of a bit of, there's a lot of upheaval within his party, within the country. It is not all, you know, goodness and light that he's going to be entering in as he begins his speech tonight. The environment is one of great tension. Thank you so much for getting us started.
Thank you.
Mally from New York, what is the environment of the speech?
Yes, this is Mally.
Yes, Mally.
So I think that he's going to try and talk to, let's say, two audiences. And one of the audiences is his supporters, and he's going to try to keep them fired up. And I think the other audience will be like the rest of us, and he's going to talk to us however he can to divide us more. I think he's going to try and...
Okay, but hold it. You're ahead of us. You're ahead of us. Rather than tell us the content of his speech and what he's likely to say, I'm still stuck at the basic question. What is the environment of the speech? And we all need to be aware of it. And this is how you listen to a speech. You don't even talk about what the speaker is saying just yet. You talk about the environment of the speech. Why? Because it will give you an excellent clue as to how the speech will be conducted by the speaker. What will the
speaker stress? You mean the environment of the people in the country? Is that environment?
I'm sorry?
When you say environment, do you mean
yes.
the citizens of the country?
Yeah, what is the state of affairs? As he gives this speech, what is he confronting? What are we confronting? What is the environment of the speech?
I think I know what you mean.
Okay.
So I'm not sure how to answer, though.
No. You know how to answer it. You know exactly how to answer it. What is the state of affairs in America? What is happening in this country as he approaches the lectern to give his speech? What is the state of affairs?
I think the majority of us are scared of the direction the country is going in.
Okay. Excellent. What else?
And we feel we have no power.
Okay.
And
that's us.
And
on
everything that we hear confuses us.
Perfect. Now, on his side, How do you think he is interpreting the environment? What is the environment to him?
I think he's used to being a bully, and he needs to use that strategy because that's what he knows best.
Look, we have to pretend at least we're being objective here. Okay, Molly. Okay, so we're not going to talk about bullying just yet. But for the president, as he approaches the lectern tonight to address the nation, what is, in your view, what is going on in his head as the environment of the speech?
I think he's not sure how the country is going to react this time.
Okay. So there's a bit of doubt as to where he's not certain. He can't call it before he even talks. He's feeling his way through.
Yeah, because of the whole thing about building a wall, he didn't get it. Although I believe that he's got it halfway there. Yeah, I mean, but he didn't expect that to happen. I think he pictured that he'd be able to get it.
Great. Thank you so much. You did great.
Thank you. I love your show.
Thank you. Me too. Because people like you come into our lives and give us things to think about. But do you see where we're going? You see what is happening? Nobody really listens to a speech in a deliberate way, for the most part. We hear a speech. We're not listening to a speech, and we generally don't prepare to listen to a speech. So that a lot of stuff, we miss out on a lot of stuff because the preparatory work isn't done. We don't think about, this guy's going to talk tonight, and supposedly he's going to talk about A, B, C, D, and E. Well, that's his agenda. You have to be a defensive listener. And the first line of defense is to ask these kinds of questions. What is the purpose of the speech? What exactly, or as close to exactly as we could get, what is the intention? What is to be accomplished by the speech? That's what you ask. Okay, David from Brooklyn, what is the intention of the speech?
Hello. I can give you my perspective. First of all, Donald J. Trump is the chief executive officer of the American empire. And one of the goals or the mission of the empire is to enrich its sponsors, you know, the corporate structure that really controls the country, all over the world. So whatever words come out of his mouth, it is designed... those words are designed to reinforce whatever is necessary to advance the interests of the empire, that is, militarily, financially, and in every way possible. And
okay,
to use those vassals.
You are ahead of us. That's the next question that we will be dealing with. And that has to do with purpose and intention of the speaker. I'm simply asking, as Donald Trump walks up to the lectern and to the microphones tonight, what do you think he understands the environment of the speech is, and what do we understand the environment of the speech is? What do you think?
All right, the environment, the physical environment, he's speaking before the little vassals who do the bidding of the ruling class that runs the country. That's the congresspeople, you know, senators and House of Representatives. He's speaking to them, and he is doing what is necessary to get them in line with his policies. And he's also speaking to the masses of people in the country so that he can get them in line with going along with these policies that do not benefit the people that live in the country, but benefit the ruling class. So whatever words, how he puts them together, whichever way he puts them together, it really doesn't make any difference. But the goal is to get people in line with following the policies of imperialism, with getting the people usually divided more, and doing going along with the policies and enrich the top and impoverish the bottom, making even sacrifices to make certain that the rich get richer. So the point I'm making is, whatever kind of words this man says, it is to deal with the policies, the ongoing policies that do what they're doing right now, which is a world domination, expanding the military, making fantastic profits for the contractors that make military equipment and provide services, and make people afraid of the necessary need to have enemies, quote unquote. You know, and okay. Now the okay. enemies are the Chinese and the Russians. So, you all know, right. That's the main goal of this speech.
All right. Thank you. But we are way beyond where we ought to be for the moment. It's a very simple, where we are is as basic as it gets. And yet it is the most important thing. Whenever I go someplace and some, you know, person of note is making a speech, well, I expect the person to make a speech. Okay. But very few people pay attention to the environment of the speech. What is happening? Just like a historian would do. When a historic event occurs, an excellent historian, of course, will get the facts and, you know, would examine what happens from several different points of view. But the historian is very concerned about the environment of an event. Why? Because it has to do with what the key people are thinking and doing at a particular time, and what the people are thinking and doing at the same time. What is happening? For example, and I'm kind of sort of answering or giving you good hints here, the environment of the speech is occurring in a fractured nation at the time that the nation is exhibiting so many signals that it is a fractured nation. It is occurring at a time when the president is heading up a chaotic administration. It is occurring at a time where we have seen more than any other administration lately, mass exodus, which is a sense that people who are in the administration are losing faith. It is occurring at a time that even his own party is fielding possible candidates against him. It is occurring at a time that he suffered perhaps the most telling blow to his way of doing things since taking office. And it was over this wall, this vote, that said, we're not dealing with that. He was shut down. So he's coming to the speech as a wounded man. He has suffered a major political blow. This is the environment of the speech. America is in turmoil. And he's making the speech. This would be the last speech before another presidential election. That's the environment of the speech. So this speech has to do a multitude of things from the point of view of the speaker. There's a lot riding on it. And so when we appreciate the environment of the speech, we understand intuitively what Donald Trump sees as the purpose of the speech, what he's got to do. This business of unity, for example, stressing unity and bipartisanship, do you think that is accidental? No. Before he even says a word, he just says this is what he wants to talk about. He's in trouble. The speech is supposed to help him out of the hole he's in. And he's dug a deep hole, like the Africans' saying is, you dig a hole to fill a hole. That's where he's been. So this is a wounded president. A president who has been smacked around in ways that most presidents have not been. He got his comeuppance recently before the whole world to see. People are now more adept than they have ever been at understanding that Trump talks. What does he deliver? This is a president who has garnered the reputation as an inveterate liar who cannot be trusted. This is the environment of the speech. He'll do his best to win back some of the so-called trust that he has lost, if he ever had it. But this is the environment of the speech, and he cannot be separated from it. So a large part of his work in this speech tonight is to make some kind of attempt at an act of contrition, that he's a humbled man, that he has seen the error of his ways. He's still strong, and he's still standing, and he's still willing to fight, but the truth is the truth, and that's where your assessment and my assessment comes in, which is independently, we understand something that even he doesn't think we understand. And we understand the environment of the speech. So we could actually sit here now and come up with several major points, not even having seen his speech, but we know exactly where he's going. Because we understand the environment of the speech that puts him in a particular place in this moment of time. And he is the only one, because this is a State of the Union address, he is the only one who could dig himself out of a hole. At least he's the only one who could try to dig himself out of this hole right now. But your analyses are right. I'm just trying to get you to see that even before the speech is made, we know what's going on. We don't have to wait to hear what he says. We know exactly the position he's in. We know exactly what he has to do. We know exactly how he's likely to respond. And the first indication was he wants to talk about bipartisanship and unity. It's a laugh, but okay, he's got to do it. All right. So now, Bruce, you pick up the issue from here. Is there anything else you think you want to add to the environment of the speech before we go on to the next segment?
Yes, I have to say a few things. I think you were a bit unfair to your listeners today because maybe you took us in too deep of waters for ourselves, right? But when we talk about environment, we're talking about political, economic, social, technological, environmental environments, right? So you dealt with the political environment, right? But the economic environment, he has big problems on. He has big problems
Absolutely.
In the military environment. He has big problems everywhere. You know, I
exactly.
am sorry I didn't get a chance
that
to say this before
exactly
you said you did. But you dealt with the political environment. That's only one environment, you know? I mean, there are many environments, right? And all these other environments he has big problems with. You know, he can't get a peace agreement with the North Koreans, you know? He's basically a dead end with Venezuela. I mean, he's losing on every front, you know? So it's even worse than you say when you dealt with the political environment alone, right? Because every environment is in
take
deep
your
trouble.
Point, and you're absolutely right. I can't argue with it. You're absolutely right. I didn't mean to limit it to, of course, political. I was just citing examples. But
yeah, of course, yeah.
Please continue, because where you're going is exactly what we need to keep in mind as we listen to the commander-in-chief tonight.
Yes, but this is the type of thing that I do all the time. I happen to have a certain type of training, and this is what I do all the time. I analyze environments, and I see things like concentric circles. On the outer environment, there are any environments, and then you go to the subject in the middle, right? That's how I analyze things, right? But, you know, I have done seen. I mean, there's no way for him to go. I don't think he has the ability to get himself out of this. And the hole is so deep. I mean, there's no exit ramp for him to go. I mean, I don't think he has the ability to get himself out of this, if that were even possible. So my conclusion would be that this hole is going to bury him, that, you know, that he is not going to help himself this evening.
What is going to be the most glaring fact? Even as he presents his points of view on all these different subjects, what is going to be the most glaring thing about his speech tonight?
Well, I think the most glaring thing is that he is going to assume that the economy is still doing well for a larger number of people than actually are doing well.
Oh, yeah, going to be his sales pitch, you know. That
Precisely,
things are-
right. yeah. Yeah, I think so. But, I mean, you know, it's difficult for me to come to that conclusion because all these other environments are so dire, you know. And any one of them, I mean, even acting together, they'll bring him down, but any one of them has the potential of sinking him, you know. So it's difficult for me to see any particular one more important. But I think this is the one that he will make false assumptions on.
All right.
And maybe
Thank
his
you.
Own ability. Yeah, maybe his own ability to you know, he still sees he has an ability to sell an ice to an Eskimo. You know, and he may have failed. His personality situation may help him to fail as well.
Thank you. So look how big this thing has become, and we haven't heard the speech, but we know intuitively. This is my point. You already have the information. You just have to become more conscientious in your application of what you know to what is being presented to you. The man is in big trouble, and Bruce is absolutely correct about that. He is in big trouble, and you don't get out of it that easily. What we will find is that there will be few solutions discussed. There will be ideas. There will be few reports about what actually has been engaged in with other nations or even domestically, what has been engaged in that has yielded results? He's not going to be talking about that. He'll be talking mostly conceptually, because that removes the obligation to produce facts and figures. He's not going to be talking about too much about facts and figures. He'll talk about facts and figures if they support something that he wants to talk about. But we are very clear. The person coming to the lectern tonight is a wounded man facing multiple crises, most of them of his own making. And now, as in this last speech before the next presidential election, and by the way, that is part of one of the responsibilities he has that he's not doing too well at, which is to build the Republican Party to withstand the onslaught of the Democrats. He's got to do that work too. So this is no slouch of a speech. As Mr. Teeth would say, a pity the fool who will have to make this kind of speech tonight. Marcus from Wisconsin, what are your thoughts about the environment of the speech? What do you read as the president's temperament as he comes to the podium tonight?
Well, the individual psychology of figureheads doesn't interest me in the slightest because it's irrelevant. By the way, always a pleasure to be a witness to your wise circumspection, and thank you very much for the John Henrik Clark speech yesterday.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
The context of the speech is, as far as I can tell, as follows. We have a 30% child poverty rate in this country. It's undiscussable. The greatest wealth disparity in human history, the wealthy in this country enjoy a state that divine right of kings and monarchs just dreamed about. 50% of the nation agrees with the idea of torturing people. So half the nation at least has a fascist orientation. We are openly discussing whether or not we should use the Hitler strategy in the Sudetenland in Venezuela, and the entire population sits still for it. We gas little children on the southern border, and we are in fact using the first baby step to military rule and martial law by acclimating the population to having troops used for domestic purposes. Now, any six-year-old can see where this is going. We have some of the lowest educational levels in the world, and this is all these speeches. Don't listen to the speeches. Read the speech. Read them all the way back to Lincoln's time, and you will see that the content of these speeches wouldn't make a good fifth grade book report. This is propaganda. This is I don't put the importance on the modulation of our media kabuki theater, you know, the daily hen house fire of the media cycle. Bawk, 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 bawk. That's just to excite the morons. What this always is, what politics is in the modern era everywhere, is operantly conditioned social reflex. You know, you repeat the same cliches and tropes, and it doesn't matter who says them about democracy and freedom and free markets and all this BS that has no reality whatsoever. But the majority of educated people believe it. So the speech will be another exercise in imbecility. If you actually read the speech, you won't be able to glean one useful fact or idea from it. In fact, there hasn't been a politician since the end of World War II in the United States at any level whom an original idea would not kill dead on the spot. None of them have had one. These are tools of money power. That's what All right. our system is. That's the context.
All right. That's fine. And it is hard to argue against anything you've said because it's quite factual. But what I wanted us to do today, to use the time to look at the relationship between what will be, it will become news tonight, and what we know going into the event, and how we line up the two. We have to begin the process of seeing things analytically. There's nothing, or there will be few things that would be surprising to us tonight. But if we do not reference our own ideas as we examine what is presented, then we lose so much more. That's the whole thing, to keep our brains on point as we listen to a speech.
But, present our view to whom?
There is no mechanism in U.S. society
for the population to express itself whatsoever in any kind of collective way. It's simple. What are you going
to
do it at the mall? There's nothing.
That's fine. Even if we talk to each other, it is a move in the right direction because we need to reinforce in each other the idea that our intuition and our own intelligence is far superior to what it is we are being offered. But thank you for advancing the idea today. From California, Steve, you're on the air.
Hi, Shea. Hi, Teresa. Great talking to you again.
Thank you, Steve. Good to talk with you.
I think he's fighting for his political life. And he'll try to justify his positions. I think he'll totally deny any problems in his administration. I don't think he will be contrite. I think it would be out of character. His internal environment is fear of failure and paranoia. So I just believe he'll be justifying in any way with what any manufactured figures he can come up with, and any accusations toward his the people that aren't supporting his policies.
Let me ask you, in your experience, have you yourself listened to a speech analytically, or are you typical, like many of us, right? Typical, we just listen. I mean, we just hear. We're not listening.
Well, I don't know. In terms of his own speeches, I feel like he's speaking to us on a kind of a six-year-old level. So I kind of try to pick apart the kind of, arrogant, condescending tones of his speeches.
And you don't expect anything different tonight?
I just find it different, unless there's some really ingenious speech writing, behind him. because I don't think he's capable of writing, bringing any of his own ideas up there. But I just feel it's going to be it's going to be a kind of interesting, kind of hilarious, kind of surreal. A lot of my friends won't be watching because they can't hear, they can't listen to the sound of his voice, but it will be just rather an interesting part of American history tonight, I believe.
But I think we're seeing a consensus here in the caller's observations that the president at this time is a man in deep trouble. Do you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, I agree. Since he doesn't have the wall to really point to, and maybe some other accomplishments, it's going to be difficult for him to show that many positives. So I believe he's going to be defending his ideas to his base.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much, Steve. Good to hear from you. Gwen from New York, you're on the air. What is going to transpire tonight that we should be looking at in a less than literal way? We should be looking at it from a perspective that allows us to put all these things that we are discussing today together as we listen to the President of the United States make his State of the Union address.
Well, I think the most important thing for people to listen for is what is he going to do about this war? And then the next thing I think we should be looking for is the reaction of the Democrats and who is supporting this. And so
What war are you talking about?
The war with Venezuela.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I just think I might be jumping the gun, but I'm pretty sure listening to these people, this is what they're looking for. This is where all this propaganda is going to go to. And there is a plan behind this plan. The next plan is to attack Cuba. And then after that, I think it's El Salvador. So what I'm looking for is I'm looking to see who applauds when he starts to talk about the Venezuela so-called crisis. And I want to see who's on the Democratic side who's going to be supporting that. And I'll also be looking to see whether it is not said at all. If it's not said, that's also a problem because it's been flooding the airwaves. So for me, the environment will be this. First of all, Nancy Pelosi's not going to give an inch. She's going to be back there at least pretending to fight him every step of the way. The Democrats will be sitting down. They won't be standing and applauding for him until he brings up the poor people of Venezuela that are caught up with this evil dictator. They might actually clap for that. But I do not see him as a wounded man, and I'll tell you why. Because President Trump is a psychopath. You cannot wound him. You cannot wound him. He leads with his ego, and that is it. And you can say whatever you want, and it does not affect him. It just doesn't affect him. And that's why, no matter what has been said about him, most people would have been destroyed by this point with all of this, the negative press he has taken. But he endures it because he really can't hear it. I mean, he hears it. He has a little piddle of a rebuttal. He puts it out, a rebuttal, and he puts it out there on tweet. And then he just keeps moving forward because the only game in the room tonight is going to be Trump. That's it for him. Trump doesn't care about anything except for Trump. He is there. He is your leader and dictator. That's what he thinks. And that's how he's going to lead. He might have been told that he has to look at the teleprompter and read those words, and then everyone, will have a sigh of relief from the Republican Party when it's over because at least he stuck to the script. That seems to be the biggest achievement for him is and the biggest kudos at the end is that he was able to stick to a script that somebody put in front of him. But I think for tonight, I myself am not really expecting anything. I am I'm numb. I'm numb from all the propaganda. I'm numb from listening to him. And I think many Americans are also numb. I do think that it has been very divisive, but I think that many Americans are beginning to feel very apathetic. Like, who the F cares? Let's watch something else. I don't know, but I think people are getting war weary from all this. And I think there's going to be a sense of that hanging in the air tonight And I don't think he's going to change, because I don't think that you can change a psychopath. I just don't think you can. At least that's what the doctors say. So I think Trump's going to do what Trump does. And I think the Democrats are going to act like they're rolling up their sleeves and they're getting to work. And they're going to put their token progressive in at the end. Smart move to put her in to fool the people so that they think the Democrats are actually moving in a progressive way. But I don't think so. But I don't think there's going to be that much excitement tonight. But I think what I'm going to watch for, and what I'm very, very concerned about, I'm so terrified about what we're going to do to Venezuela and the Pandora's box that we are opening up. And I want to watch all the sellouts from the Democratic Party that are going to turn their backs on what's right.
But Gwen, is this Trump?
Sorry?
Is this Trump? Singularly Trump? Or is this, as David had suggested, is he essentially a stand-in for, an acolyte of, a whole different order we're not seeing, but they are very powerful, and not only in the United States.
Yes, they seem
to be all over the world now and consolidating their power. And they are running the show. Giving assignments to the so-called leaders, the prime ministers, the presidents.
That's right. That's, you know what, Yatrice, months ago, when we were talking about this, months ago I brought this up. I said that I saw this thing all over the world where dictators are popping up in every country, one right after the other. And Trump was like the first one in there. And I think that the powers that be behind the scenes, and there's only 180 of them, and they run the entire planet, have decided that this is the way they want to go. And I wouldn't be surprised if there was actually a deal made behind the scenes with Russia and China to allow us to go in Venezuela and do what we say we're going to do. But, you know, there's also this line of thought, and this not vote for Hillary. They heard Hillary talk about no fly zones. And that meant if Russia, you know, had a missile that went over Syria, we intended to take that down. And many people saw that as World War III and said, no way, we can't vote for her. So there's still that faction of these leaders behind the scenes that want to have a war. And they want to have a nuclear war because their reasoning is that it's going to happen sooner or later. We might as well get in front of this thing and get it out of the way. And Trump is crazy enough to take us to a place like that. They needed a leader like this. They needed somebody that was so crazy, so narcissistic, that he wouldn't listen to anybody. He wouldn't consider the facts. He would just do what was going to make him more popular. And I think tonight the only wound you're going to see on Trump is that he is seeing this war, or this potential war with Venezuela, is putting him in a better light. He's getting approval from more people, including Democrats, and he likes that. And, you know, he's like a dog. It's like this one action he does, and you keep throwing him a bone for the action. So, you know, I listened to him on the radio this morning and talking about this, and then I heard the escalation by John Bolton. And I just see that Trump thinks, oh, this is the path I go down if I want to get that, you know, if I want to get that liquid treat in my ear, if I want to hear how wonderful I am, this is the path I'm going to go down. So I think that it's a very, very dangerous thing that we're taking on in the United States. I really think it's unbelievable.
For the masses of people, do you think they see Trump as a wounded man, as a person in a very tight spot right now? Or do you think that Trump will successfully persuade them that he is, in fact, still with them, still fighting for them every step of the way?
Okay, I've got to tell you something. I listen to people all the time, and I talk about Trump, and I hear all of his core supporters think he is not wounded. They think he is not wounded. They don't see him as wounded. They just, in their minds, want him to stay the path, because all they want is change. And they don't really care what the change is. They just want change. I think as far as people like me on the left, I do not see Trump as wounded. I don't see him as wounded. I don't think you can wound him, because
because of who he is mentally, you cannot wound him. You got to understand the psychology of somebody like this. These people, these are why they're so dangerous. There's no way that whatever you say to them is going to stick. It doesn't matter to them. And so this is where you have, you know, this psychopathic behavior is where you get these horrible criminal minds. And there's many of them in there. Don't tell me that Dick Cheney's not a psychopath, too. It wouldn't matter what you said to Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney was going to do what he wants to do the way he wants to do it. And he's an extraordinarily dangerous man. And I just want to say one last thing about this Elliot Abrams. When I looked at his face the other day on TV, I thought I was looking at the devil himself. The man looks like evil, walking evil, and he is walking evil. And this is what this White House is completely comprised of. I mean, it's not just evil people. It's unabashed evil people. It is evil people that are going to go and do what they want to do, and they cannot hear what you're saying because many of them are psychopaths and they don't even own that. That's not even part of their chemical makeup, so they can't hear what you're going to say. It doesn't matter.
Well,
they just know what they want.
You have to leave it there because we're out of time. But thank you so much, Gwen. Thank you, everyone, for your considered opinions today. And we continue tomorrow. Bye-bye.